Hello and welcome to The Preservationists, the monthly radio show for fans of local historic architecture, the history of unique buildings, and the people from our community working to preserve and restore them. I'm Astronomus Ray, the president of the board of directors at Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS, and the host of The Preservationists. Thank you for tuning in. Today, we're shining a spotlight on a gem of the Pacific Coast, the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum, located right in the heart of Ilwaco, Washington. I'd first like to start by introducing my guests for this episode, Michelle Claude Clemente and Stacy Piero. Now, what led you guys to want to be a part of the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum?
Well, I was asked to help with the darkroom. We used to have one 30 years ago. And so they needed someone who could work and do that. And so that's how I got started. My father was interested. He was there as a volunteer for the trains. And so it was just a natural progression. And they haven't been able to get rid of me since. So that's how I got started.
Yeah. And how many years have you been a part of the museum?
Since 91.
Wow. Very, very long.
Yes.
Very nice. Yes. And what about you, Michelle?
So I'm the exact opposite from Stacy. I moved to the area about a year ago, and I've been at the museum for about 6 months. I come from a different background, so it might seem unlikely to some that I ended up at a museum. I come from zoos and natural resource management, but zoos are managed exactly the same way as museums. And as the executive director, the management skills are more important for what I do than the knowledge of the technical aspects of a historical museum. But being new to the community, I also saw it as a wonderful opportunity to learn and explore and really get to know the area and the history of the people in the area. So it was a natural for me when I saw that the position was open. So, and it's been a fun 6 months.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of history and, you know, important factors about Ilwaco in itself. Ilwaco is very rich in a lot of the train history that I've seen with the museum. So now, to explain the museum itself to listeners who've never been able to visit, what all does the museum entail?
Stacy and I were talking about it a little bit, and basically it's the story of the people in the area, all the people, and I think I even wrote it down. It's the story of the regular folks that have decided to live here, make a life here, all the wonderful natural resources and how people and natural resources and they've all worked together. So that's my take.
Yeah, how we're all connected, not just Ilwaco, but across, I mean, the rivers, you know, the rivers were the roads. And so people connected, and it goes back way before settlers got here. And just, you know, keeping that and reminding folks that this is, you know, who was here and how they lived. And it's not that different than it is now. I mean, you know, things change, but a lot of it is the same.
And how is that reflected through the museum? I know you guys have a lot of photography that goes on there. Mm-hmm. What does this mean to the community being brought to them? Because do people come in a lot with their own photos? How does that all work?
Well, yes, that's how we get all our photos. Actually,
all of our collection.
All our collection. We don't buy anything. And so everything that we have has been donated to the museum. And we take that very seriously. And we, you know, you want to keep it, you want to show it. You know, some folks think, oh, we donated something, but we don't see it out. And it's like, well, as with most museums, you can't have everything out. And it's not good for the items. And same thing with the artifact, with the and the photographs we're scanning and digitizing, because we don't want the originals to be mishandled and have more problems. So it's, you know, just trying to share that, and people come through. They do bring in family treasures. We get some wonderful photo albums that are mailed to us. We just had a beautiful album sent to us that they found it in a shop in like Minnesota, and they saw Il Waco and they looked it up. And of course, there's only one Il Waco. I mean, it really is. It's very unique. And they said, would you like it? And it has fabulous photos. And we've gotten stuff like that, you know, and we don't know who the people are. We don't know. There's a lot of things we don't know. But you look at the photos and you go, I know that spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even if you don't know who they are, you can guess time frame. Mm-hmm. And that's important. There's just so much. And so, yeah.
And that, I just to add to that, I think that's one of the things that's so special is we're in the community and we're stewarding the community's stories. And because we're so closely connected that that stewardship is really important to us. And I think that that's one of the things that's special that you notice when you walk through the museum is that the care that goes into stewarding that story, telling that story, looking at things from different points of view and you know, stitching together the tapestry that's this area. So I think that's one of the things that we do exceptionally well. And you feel it when you come to the museum.
Now, looking at the types of stories that the museum focuses on, I know we talk a lot about the community of Il Waco, but are there any significant outstanding stories that are highlighted that you guys maybe see a lot more of?
I would say one of the things that, so we have our exhibits that don't change, but we have a rotating exhibition. And to me, being new, I think that's really interesting that we have different exhibits. We do 4 a year. Yeah. And they're diverse. When I started, it was the hat show. And then we moved to the Eugene Landry show. Totally, completely different ends of the spectrum. And I think that's good. It keeps things interesting and new and fresh, but it also maybe attracts a different audience. You know, the hats that we have all belong to people that still know people. It's, you know, it's really neat. The Landry exhibit made me cry. It's, you know, it's just a beautiful exhibit. It's a quality exhibit. You know, we're just little Il Waco, but we have like this amazing exhibit. And you can go through the exhibits and take your time and read the graphics and learn. And I love that. And that's wonderful. But I like that we're able to give a fresh perspective to things, you know, 4 times a year that we can, you know, hopefully bring some new people in and they go through the regular exhibits and they see, you know, all the different stories. But it just gives that little extra zest, I guess I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice to kind of see different varieties of that. Can you kind of explain a bit further what the hat exhibit was?
I think Stacy probably should because I had just started.
The hats, actually, the hats, because we have quite a few hats in textiles in the collection, and they need to get out and be seen. And then how do you do that? And it's finding out about the people who wore them, mm-hmm. who had them, who made them, and doing a lot of research into those and talking to the families, because a lot of them, there's still family connections, you know, and getting that information. And it was very interesting it is about the people of the area. Okay, that one directly is, you know. And so that was the first kind of a show we did like that specifically, about not just the hat, but that we brought out the clothes too that fit with mm-hmm. the hat. So you could see the whole thing and we had photos of the people and that, I think that's kind of interesting for folks and they can come and they can see, you know, relatives, but also other people that they didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, that's a really unique exhibit. I haven't heard much about like displaying hats in general, but that dives into such an interesting piece of history of what people's maybe day-to-day lives mm-hmm. were like.
Yes, because they're you know, they're fancy and they wore them for different occasions. I mean, some of them were real fancy, and then others were just everyday wear. Admiral yes. Jack's uniform got out. We don't get to pull that out very often, but we have his uniform and hat. So that's also something that we, you know, we're happy to be able to do and
yeah.
share.
And can you share with our listeners a little bit about Admiral Jack?
Admiral Jack Williams. He was very much involved in starting with the museum and helping us in the early years. And so very important with the museum. But yeah, he's got a lot. He has a lot of history here.
That's a really nice exhibit. And I think that's a really unique perspective. So how do you guys come up with these ideas for these exhibits?
Well, a lot of that, though, goes to Betsy.
It is Betsy.
That is Betsy Ward.
So our curator.
Yes. She has ideas and shares them and, you know, we'll work off of that. And sometimes you're like, what? And you don't see it. She has a vision and then she goes with it. And the next exhibit that will be going up is the salmon label exhibit. And it's not about the canneries. It's about the art.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's fascinating. She's delved into it. And Matt Winters, it's his collection. It's amazing. And when you start looking at all of the different art, the marketing, the everything behind it is absolutely fascinating because some of it's really obscure. You're like, what does that have to do with, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's just other ways to look at things. But a lot of this is from the mind of Betsy. And the Landry, Judith.
Altura.
Yeah, just... Yeah. Did a wonderful job of curating that and putting that together.
So. I also have to plug that we're a free museum. And when we do the rotating exhibits, we do an opening and we also do a gallery talk or some form of explanation of what is in the exhibit. Not on all of them, but frequently. And it's a wonderful opportunity for any of the listeners to come see the museum, but also hear from some people that are doing some amazing work in the community and hear about what the contribution is, whatever the exhibit happens to be.
Yeah.
It's a really wonderful opportunity. And I come from a larger area, and the fact that it's free is just amazing to me. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely opportunity.
Yeah, that definitely is a great opportunity for our listeners to go out and visit that. Looking at an exhibit that was more recent, and you guys had mentioned Eugene Landry. He has some pretty incredible work, actually. Can you explain a little bit about his exhibit and, you know, everything that was displayed?
So we have a lot of his works, even some sketches and some incomplete works. It's his story is very compelling and amazing and inspiring. And I think that the way that we've been able to exhibit it, we have his art and the graphics and all of the supplemental materials tell about the story of his life, which he had a very difficult life and still kept going and did some really influential and amazing work. When we did the gallery talk, though, Judith, the curator of the collection, she decided to talk about his technique. I'm not an artist, so it was an amazing educational opportunity for me to learn about how artists learn and how they, you know, develop as professional artists and continue. It has received very strong positive reviews, and it was such a good exhibit that we extended it actually through December 20th. So we were actually going to wrap it up at the end of October, but it's just been so popular that we've kept it open. It's a very good exhibit.
You know, when we talk about some of these events that have taken place, what kind of programs or events or community gatherings are held at the museum? It looks like there's a couple of a variety of stuff.
We have railroad days in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And we have different events depending. We have the Dahlia Show. We have Daffodils and Driftwood and Daffodils, I should say it that way.
Yeah. But mostly daffodils.
But mostly daffodils. It depends on the driftwood. Because we do limit the size of the driftwood. And I think, you know,
it could get big.
You know, we've had different events during, for a long time, we did the, before COVID hit us, we were doing cranberrying every year and to help the growers and, you know, with harvest and everything. And they continued on with it and really got it out in the bogs during that time during COVID because you couldn't be inside. And so we just let them have that. And you were like, good, keep going.
Yeah.
And so so that gives us something else that we can, you know, open up to for other events. So it just depends.
And I think we're also a place, a community place where different organizations can have their meetings.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we try to really support being, you know, sometimes it's hard to have a space to have a meeting for mm-hmm. some of the different groups. So, and we're supporting the weavers, the
rug hookers, the quilters, do their quilt show every year. And we have a train group. We have
American Legion.
Yeah, but yes.
I think as sitting in my chair and looking to the future, I think we're going to be spending the next couple of years developing programs to bring different audiences in, reaching out to the youth and, mm-hmm. and younger people and trying to become a resource for that group as well. But also, you know, potential field trips and things like that. We are looking to get those kind of programs going and building a docent core that we can take our show on the road and,
yeah.
and not just have people come to us, but we can go to them. I think this next year, one of the things that we're really working on is teaching people how to do their own genealogy and creating a way to preserve that so that it's not just like I'm trying to get stuff out of my mom's head and it's very difficult.
Yeah.
So, you know, working on helping people get their family stories preserved and kept for future generations. And I think one of the things too, I've been talking to everybody to get in their brains, but we also want to work on preserving what's going on right now for the people that follow us so that we're not leaving them with a piecemeal story. That so we're looking at what, you know, not just looking backwards, but looking at now and looking forward, I think is what's in the next few years for us.
And that's always a good thing because we never think of now as history until 20, 50 years have passed.
Yeah, well, yep. And people will ask us for, you know, do you have any photos of this time period? And we're like, well, no, because you probably have it at home.
Yeah.
And you don't think of it as something that should go to a museum.
Yeah.
And it's like, actually, you know, there's a lot of that, with especially with the photos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's time frames. And now it's even more important because now you're not printing photos.
Yeah.
It's all on your phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, it's harder as technology changes, which is also something we show at the museum. You know, you see things and we had
the typewriter.
Oh my goodness. This young lady came running out of the back and she was so excited because she had never seen a typewriter before. And we were all like, really?
Really?
I don't know. When we went to school, we had to learn how to do it. So you know, you don't think about
mm-hmm.
are things that are exciting, you know, then and for people that they don't know what things. And we do get questions. What is that object?
Yeah, no, I think that's important definitely to carry kind of things on to the younger generations like mm-hmm. you were speaking about, because, you know, we don't realize the evolution until like a certain amount has passed. And then we start to realize that maybe there is a gap in what our mm-hmm. knowledge is, you know,
yes.
in terms of history.
Yeah.
So as we think about visitors that come into the museum, what's one story from your guys' museum's collection that you feel that you wish each visitor can know and be a part of?
I think that still goes back to how we're all connected.
Yeah.
I would agree. How everybody is a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
it might seem insignificant, but it's not.
But there's, you know, one of the things that I really like to do is when I'm looking at the photos and we have names, and most of the time it's Mrs. John Brown.
That's a good,
okay. I like to find out her name.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give her name because she did just as much as he did, if
oh,
not
yeah.
more. And it wasn't, and I realized for the time frame, the title of Mrs. John Brown was very important to her. You know, it's not something that's terrible. And I've had some people who are upset about it. And I'm like, you know, actually it meant something.
Yeah.
And to the person. And so I said, it's not a bad thing, but it's nice to be able to know who she was.
Then I have to put my executive director hat on. The staff at the museum are some of the best hunters of names and records. They're amazing. They are like hunting dogs. They are not going to let go till they find the answer.
Yeah. And so it's trying to find that and also their stories, because everybody does have one.
Yeah.
And they're all important.
Well, thank you for that. That was a very good saying. Mm-hmm. Now, when we look at smaller regional museums, is there any challenges that you guys face?
Yes. And I would say, I mean, at the risk of sounding cliche, money. And I know that doesn't sound glamorous, but I believe in the work we do, and it's important. And it's important for the community. It's important for the larger stories. But funding is difficult. And so, you know, we have to hustle. We have to wear a lot of hats. None of us at the museum are full-time. Even I am part-time. So we have to do some heavy lifting. We have to do it fast. And I think one of the things, you know, being new, it's a little daunting because we don't have a lot of capacity for failing or making a mistake. So we need to be spot on and, you know, get the grant funding and, you know, talk to the community and make sure that we're being valuable to the community, but not only being valuable, articulating our value to the community so that they know that we're important and, you know, that not only do they know it, they feel it, and hopefully they can help. But it's hard when communities are struggling too. So if the community's struggling and we're begging for money, it doesn't work. And so kind of, you know, working on being creative about coming up with programs, finding new grant streams. It's been a hard year for museums as far as grant funding goes. And so, you know, really being thoughtful about that and being very purposeful in how you spend money. And then I have to do a big shout out too for our volunteers. We couldn't do it without our volunteers. We rely heavily. You know, it takes all of us pulling together to do it. Yep. But, you know, we have an old building. We have precious collection that has certain requirements for how we maintain the collection. You know, we have a high need for technology because we're archiving all of this stuff, and we need to maintain archival things. Mm-hmm. And so there's all of these different things coming together behind the exhibits. And mm-hmm. so the exhibits, you know, are there and wonderful, but there's a whole backside of things that's very technical and very complicated, and you can't mess up with how you store things.
Well, you know, for our listeners out there who are interested, how can we support the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum? Can we volunteer? Can we become members? How do we become
membership,
involved?
Membership.
Yeah. Membership is difficult for us because we're free. So typically, mm-hmm. you know, what a member would get would be free admission, but we're already free. So we try to have more offerings so that we can, you know, be attractive as a person might want to be our member. So if you believe in our work, being a member is a wonderful way to support our work, but also volunteering is a wonderful way to support our work. If people are unfamiliar with us, visiting is a great way to start and see what it is and take it from there. If you want to volunteer, we have lots of opportunities for volunteers. If you want to donate, we have lots of opportunities for donating. If you want to be a member and, you know, be in that middle zone, we're happy to have more members. And I think, you know, we're at a period where we're going to be exploring doing some different things. So, you know, we're open to hearing people's ideas and thoughts on what are some of the things that we can do to engage the community in different and bigger ways.
Yeah. Circle back. What is your long-term vision, and what do you hope people continue on with this museum?
I think we're already there, but I'd like to just expand on it. We are a community resource. We're very community-based, and I'd like to see us continue that and expand into different areas of our community. I think that we can, through the temporary exhibits and just our education programming, we can tell more stories. We can hear more stories. We don't just want to tell the stories. We want to hear the stories mm-hmm. as well. What I see is my vision for the next 5-10 years is really expanding our capacity to do that, like getting ourselves to a point where we can be bringing in more. Right now, I feel like we're maxed out with what we have now. But going forward, I think there's some opportunities to really engage a broader community, mm-hmm. more stories, you know, more opportunities. And I think once you start down that road, more opportunities open up. And that's the exciting part for me. Yeah. Is like when you start going down a road, you see all these new roads and trees mm-hmm. and all sorts of different things. And so I'm hoping that we can do that.
Is there anything that you wish more people knew about the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum?
We're not on the main street in Owako, but we're in Owako.
Yeah, and we do exist.
And we're there. But yeah, I think that would be the main thing. I think a lot of people just go through the main drag and they don't. We're one block off of it. And so I think even in our own area, and that's why I was saying we need to expand our community. There's people that kind of know we exist, but kind of don't know we exist.
Yeah.
We have research days. We have a lot of opportunities for people to do things. And so, yeah, we're going to be working on getting the word out that, you know, we're here and these are the things we do and we'd love to have you come and join us.
And if you see the train car, that's
where
we are.
Yay. Okay. I love it. Awesome. Well, thank you both for joining me today. I appreciate you sharing about the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum. There's a lot of great stories that you guys shared, and I think that our listeners should definitely go visit.
Me too.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. My name is Astronomist Ray.
My name is Michelle Claude Clementi.
And I'm Stacey Pirro.
And thank you for tuning in to this month's episode of The Preservationists. I'd like to thank my guests for this month for joining me on this episode of The Preservationists. I appreciate you both taking the time to share with our listeners about the work, history, and heart behind the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum. This is a production of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society. If you're interested in more information about the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS, be sure to visit our website, www.lcpsociety.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Lower Columbia Preservation Society. Upcoming events for the Lower Columbia Preservation Society will be Topics in Preservation on January 21st at the LCPS headquarters. Topics in Preservation is open to everybody and is free. Thank you for tuning in to this month's episode. Be sure to tune in again next month. The Preservationist airs every third Tuesday of the month on KMUN at 9:30 a.m. I'd like to give a special thanks to the team here at KMUN, the members, volunteers, and staff at the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, and a special thanks to Camilla Swordlaw for producing the theme song of The Preservationist. The Preservationist is a production of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society for KMUN, written and produced by Astronomist Ray. I'm Astronomist Ray, and remember, when it comes to preservation, anyone can be a preservationist. Thank you for listening.